Well, faithfulness, dependable, devoted, trustworthy, signing the dotted line, meaning something, unwavering commitment, staying true to one's word, and dare I say or use in maybe an old term, covenants being kept. Our words and phrases, I think that especially those maybe of the more experienced generation sitting here, we would all agree have lost some impact over time. As time and generations have gone by, those words have lost some of their meaning. Generosity, selflessness, graciousness, tenderness, kindness seems to be much harder to tangibly be seen in our world today. As we live in a world and a culture that's kind of a fly-by-the-seat of our pants, live-in-the-moment type of culture, looking out for good old number one, and months and years pass us by, right? And as Christians, we should be a people whose characters kind of have this aroma of those things. We should have this overflow of those words and phrases that I just pictured for each of us. We should be displaying those in our lives, but as we all know, we don't. We don't. Many times we're not, due to the sin that we fight against each and every day and the war against our flesh. We do things that we don't want to do, and we don't do things we want to do. And so today, I hope we can together walk our way through, as you guys I think can see the title on the screen, The Kindness of a King. The Kindness of a King, King David. And then see the grace and kindness of the King, King Jesus. So go ahead and take your copy of God's Word and please turn to 2 Samuel chapter 9 with me. Before we get into the actual text or the story that we're going to work through today, I want to walk us up to the story fairly quickly. In 1 Samuel, those many of us have read that, there was a man named Saul, right? And he was the people's choice to be king, and he would be king of Israel, right? And after time, where once again Israel was a nation without a leader, Saul becomes king of Israel. Later in 1 Samuel chapter 16, the promise is made that one day David would be God's chosen anointed king, chosen by God, and he would take over the position at some point of King Saul. And in turn, throughout the book of 1 Samuel, you'll see this continual pursuit, this running after, this manhunt, if you want to say, after Saul's own son, his best friend, David. So Saul's pursuit of David. And so time and again, King Saul continues to attempt to take out God's chosen king of Israel. And as King Saul continually attempts to get rid of the future king, we see God's plan providentially, perfectly working itself out, protecting the future king. And so in the midst of chaos and near deaths and close calls and encounters with this unrepentant King Saul, the Lord protects David and he finally ushers him in as King David, from shepherd boy to King David. And the last scene we see in 1 Samuel is a battle that takes place. And it's a battle at Mount Gilboa, and it's between the Philistines and the Israelites. And at the end of this battle, the Philistines have won. King Saul takes his own life. King Saul, dead. A nation again without a leader. The same battle not only claimed Saul, but also claimed three of his four sons, including Jonathan, David's best friend. And by this point in the unfolding plan, David has assembled this loyal group of his own. And then he becomes king over Judah. And while we have a remaining faithful of King Saul continue to fight for the deceased king, now under new leadership for a time. And that's the first four chapters of 2 Samuel. And this first four chapters of 2 Samuel are essentially a civil war that takes place. This battle going on. A war between David and not yet the king. He's not the king yet. And his people and King Saul's people left behind and the leadership under Ishbosheth, Saul's one remaining son. these four chapters, you see the Lord again working out and taking out David's enemies. And then in chapter 5, you see David ushered in as King David. And during this long period of time, two events take place that have to be communicated to lead us up to 2 Samuel 9. Two events take place that give us the background needed to show us the kindness of the king. And so I think you can follow along on the screen with me here and look at 1 Samuel chapter 20. It says, "If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord, that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." And so this is Jonathan speaking here, King Saul's son, speaking to David in this text. And Jonathan knows that at some point David is going to be king. And essentially what Jonathan is saying is, he's saying, when that happens, David, when that one day when the Lord ushers you in as king and begins to cut off all of your enemies, promise me, David, that you won't take me out. Promise me, because though I'm your friend, being the son of King Saul, my father being your enemy, I am turned and your enemy. And I know how it works, that one day the old regimen is done away with and taken out. We see at the end of chapter 18, you don't have to turn there, but at the end of chapter 18, we see David was Saul's enemy continually. Chapter 19, you see Saul tries to kill David again. Jonathan clearly knows, and he knew, that David, his best friend, was his father's enemy. And the old king and his descendants would be no more. And Jonathan's saying, "David, if I'm still around, promise me that you won't take me out. Give your love and kindness towards me, that you will continue to be loving and kind towards me. But also promise me that you won't cut off your love and kindness from my descendants, from my children." In verse 16, you see, "And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, 'May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies.' And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul." And so this was the first point that's important to know coming up to 2 Samuel 9. And then the second one is at the end of the war of the Philistines, and at the end of 1 Samuel, that war ends and people scatter and there's chaos. The Philistines won the battle. All of Saul's sons are dead. Israel, once again, a nation without a leader. And there's this little boy. He's 5 years old. Probably many of you remember this story. He's 5 years old and he's lonesome and he's helpless. And in the midst of craziness after the war, this little boy is swept up by a nurse in chapter 4 of 2 Samuel. The nurse picks him up. She's in a hurry and she drops him. And he's crippled. And he's lame. That little boy discussed in 2 Samuel 4:4 is a guy by the name of Mephibosheth, which is Saul's grandson and Jonathan's son. So let's go ahead and read our text today with those two points in mind. Look at verse 1. "And David said, 'Is there still anyone left? Is there anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?' Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David. And the king said to him, 'Are you Ziba?' And he said, 'I am your servant.' And the king said, 'Is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him?' Ziba said to the king, 'There is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet.' The king said to him, 'Where is he?' Ziba said to the king, 'He's in the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, at Lo Debar.' Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, at Lo Debar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, 'Mephibosheth.' And he answered, 'Behold, I am your servant.' David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you in all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always.' And he paid homage and said, 'What is your servant that you should show regard for such a dead dog as I." Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce, that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord, the Lord commands his servant, so will your servant do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet. And so here you have King David sitting around. And years have gone by since King Saul and Jonathan have died. And there's this little boy, Mephibosheth, who's now fully grown because we know he has a son now, it says in the text. And he seems to begin to think back. You guys do that sometimes, right? You're just sitting around and you begin to think. And he begins to think back, and he thinks back and remembers a promise we already talked about in 1 Samuel 20. And he essentially, this is what he says, "Is there anyone left of the house of Saul that I may stay true to my word, that I may stay true to my promise that I made to my dear friend Jonathan? Is anyone out there?" And one of Saul's servants comes to the forefront and says, "Well, actually there is. It's the son of Jonathan. He's crippled. And he's way northeast, across the Jordan River. He's at Lodabar. He's way far away." And David responds and asks the servant Ziba to please go get him. And what do we see here? We see David staying faithful and committed to the promises he made, right? As it turns out, Ziba will be going after his last remaining son, Mephibosheth. And David says he's doing this for the sake of his friend Jonathan. But he also adds something in verse 3. He also follows that up in verse 3 with a greater purpose. He's going to show the kindness of God through Jonathan to Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth. So yeah, it's for the sake of Jonathan, a man, his friend. But the promise he made is much greater than that. It's not just making a promise to Jonathan. It's making a promise and a commitment to God. And so as I think about it, promises we make are broken all the time, aren't they? I mean, there's even a phrase that we kind of joke about, promises are made to be broken. Some of us may have broken promises this week. Sad to say, marriages end. Loans never get paid back. On a lighter note, telling my kids I'll get them ice cream and I totally forget. I promise you they never forget. We all have the list of promises that we've made, right? In this situation, years have gone by, and I think it would have been easy, maybe for me, if I was in David's position, to kind of justify why I'm going to break this promise. Either one, maybe you could even say you forgot the promise. It's been a long time. Most say around 16 years. It's been some time that he's made this promise to Jonathan. Or two, just simply move on without fulfilling it. I mean, who's going to know? He was out in the fields with his dear friend Jonathan at the time. He made the promise to Jonathan. No one was around, just David and his deceased friend Jonathan. Who's going to know about this? Just the two of them. What's the big deal? To David, the big deal was the commitment to his God. David's word, his covenant to his friend Jonathan, was much greater than just a promise to Jonathan. His word, the covenant, the promise, was not just to Jonathan, but to God. And so in turn, as we look at ourselves and we look at our own promises and our own covenants, our own vows that we make, our agreements are not a matter of just being faithful to a person or a place or a bank. They're a matter of our faithfulness to God. And so I know there's little ones in here, younger ones in here. When you tell mommy and daddy you will do something, do you do it? When you tell mommy and daddy that you're actually going to do something, do you actually follow through with it and do what you're going to, that you tell mommy and daddy you're going to do? for young people in here, when we're bombarded with credit card companies as soon as we turn 18, and we're set to take out those also massive loans that we get to one day pay off, are we prepared to actually commit to paying those things back? When we sign the dotted line for those things, are we prepared to keep our promise? Adults in here, are we faithful to the promises we make to our spouses, to our employers, to our lenders? Are we faithful to those things when we say we will be committed? Are we true to our word? Because see here, David took the promise he made very seriously. He could have easily done away with it, forgotten about it. No one would have known. But he goes on searching for anyone left so that he may fulfill the covenant that he made to his dear friend, Jonathan. And then if you look down at verses 3 and 4, Ziba inserts here, this man who is in Lo-Debar, he's not only crippled, but he's a long ways off. Ziba is virtually saying, David, what good is this Mephibosheth for you? What good is he for the kingdom? What's the point of me going and getting this guy? He's across the river, he's way northeast. Even right now, he has to be taken care of. What benefit is he to us? He's crippled. He's lame. Do you really want me to bring him here? And many times I think I do this. Well, maybe you do this. We think and we begin to justify. You're right. Let me weigh my option. Is this worth my time? I know I made the promise, but it's a little different than I anticipated. It's a little bit different than what I thought this was going to be when I went into this. I didn't realize that, for example, this marriage, I didn't realize it was all what I see now. I didn't realize how much that was really going to cost me when I took out these loans. I didn't realize that I actually had to follow through and get a little summer and ice cream cone. And so without hesitation, David says, he doesn't hesitate, he says, go get him. Go get him. And so Ziba goes on a journey and he goes across the Jordan. Could you imagine Ziba showing up at Mephibosheth's door? Mephibosheth, King David wants to see you. Here's the grandson of Saul, enemy of David. Grandpa was an enemy of David. In turn, in the eyes of Mephibosheth, Mephibosheth was an enemy of David. Ziba again, hey, Mephibosheth, David wants to see you. You could imagine the people in the House of Makers. Maybe, don't do it, Mephibosheth. Why would you go and meet face to face with the king of Israel, whose enemies, your grandpa spent his whole life as the king to try and slay David? Why would you go meet him face to face? Here's Mephibosheth, whose very name actually means shameful. He's saying far off. He's way far off away from the king. A crippled, lame, shameful man, enemy of David. I could imagine he was scared, anxious, intimidated. But Mephibosheth can't resist the king. That's key. We'll come back to that. Mephibosheth can't resist the king. On a side note here, I was thinking of generational consequences of a father. Just real quick, generational consequences of a father. The sin of Mephibosheth's grandpa, King Saul, is still having consequences to his grandson years later, decades later. Exodus chapter 34, you guys can read along here. It says, the Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation. And this is for all of us, but specifically here to fathers as heads of homes, as young men who maybe aren't heads of homes yet, but our sin has serious consequences. Our promises not kept has serious consequences, and not just immediately in what we can see, but generationally in what we can't see. The decisions we make, the passions we pursue, the things we spend our time with, the things we indulge in, the picture that our children and grandchildren see of grace in our lives, has immediate and long-term consequences. I just want us to think about that when you think about grandson Mephibosheth, King Saul, long dead, and there's still consequences taking place that King Saul's not even seeing right now. And so back to Mephibosheth. It doesn't say how they carried him back. Look at with me with verses 6 to 8 here. It says, Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. David said, Mephibosheth. He answers, Behold, I'm your servant. David said to him, Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your father, and you shall eat at my table always. So he comes face to face with the king of Israel, his family's enemy, and he falls on his face. And again, try and put yourself in Mephibosheth's shoes. I know it's hard to analogize a story such as this for most of us, if not all of us, virtually impossible. Maybe there are some subtle comparisons here. So just think through this with me, maybe in your own lives, to the young people in here. Have you ever had to go to dad when you knew, at least you thought you knew what the response was going to be? You got to take that long walk down the hallway when you know dad's sitting there waiting for you. Or you got to take that drive home. And it's almost at this point, it's like protocol. You know what dad's going to say. You know what his response is going to be. And it eats at you the entire way. You even know the first words out of dad's mouth. Or to those in the workforce, have you ever been called into the boss's office essentially knowing that you know what the end result's going to be? You know what's going to be said. The waiting of the appointment, the walk to the meeting room makes you sick to your stomach. Maybe for married people, you think about a time you failed your spouse and you had to be honest with them. Mephibosheth's expectations is much greater than that. The circumstances, the discipline that he's thinking that's going to come is much. He thinks he's going to be slain. He thinks he's going to die. How does David respond as Mephibosheth shows up? Three words. Mephibosheth, do not fear. He says, there's no reason to be afraid because before you were even born, I made a covenant to show kindness with your father, Jonathan. Before you didn't even know this was going on. Before you were even born, I made a covenant to show kindness to your father, Jonathan. And I promised your father that I would show kindness to you. I would not cut you off. Now, with that promise that he made to Jonathan, he had every right. David had every right to stop right here. He could have just not hurt him. He could have just showed kindness to him and kept him, not cut him off, not killed him. And he would have fulfilled the covenant that Jonathan made, him and Jonathan made. He could have stopped right here. But David doesn't. He says, Mephibosheth, don't fear. And I will restore to you all the land of Saul, your father. I won't, not only don't fear, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to kill you. But and I'm going to restore everything from the land of your grandfather. You get it all back. You know that land Grandpa Saul had, actually? You probably have no clue about it, Mephibosheth. You don't have a clue about all the blessings of all the land that Grandpa Saul had. You've been living way off in Lodabar. You don't even know about it, but guess what? It's all yours. All of that land is yours. Once again, this was way above and beyond graciousness. He was abundantly gracious here. This went beyond the promise, beyond the covenant he made. And he goes on. Do not fear. And I'm going to give you the land. And you can see maybe Mephibosheth at this point, speechless, right? Maybe looking down as he was paying homage. And David says, and, like, I'm not going to stop there. And you shall eat at my table always. you get to come and live in the kingdom. Not only don't fear, not only you get all the land back, by the way, you get to come live in the house of the king. You don't need invited over. You don't need an appointment. You don't need to ask. You just are living here. Prince Mephibosheth, adopted into my family under the royal King David. Now try and picture crippled, lame Mephibosheth who just paid homage. Try and picture his fear as he's walking, probably not more riding to meet the king, expecting to be slain. Try and picture him coming up actually face to face and looking up to the king. And then the king responds this way. And you can just picture tears welling up in Mephibosheth's eyes and his jaw sitting on the floor, speechless. Unmerited grace. I mean, you can picture it. You can picture yourself in the situation, or your son when they fail you, or when they mess up and they come to you. I know my little girls, when they were young, I would sometimes tell them I'd show them mercy. I didn't show them mercy every time, and so when I didn't show them mercy, they would just scream, "Mercy, Daddy, mercy, Daddy." But when you do show mercy, it's amazing that the response of the mercy and the emotions compared to the discipline. It seems like, and many of you guys have been in these positions, it seems like showing the mercy in the midst of consistent discipline, the mercy and the grace actually elicits a greater emotional response from my children. And so what's Mephibosheth's response? This is what he says. He says in verse 8, "What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I?" Why are you doing this? I'm in the line of the enemy. Do you remember, David, who I am? I'm Saul's grandson. He tried to kill you for years. He tried to take you out. I'm on top of it, I'm crippled. I don't have any use to you. What good am I that you would show favor on me? I'm worthless for your kingdom. Again, I can picture Mephibosheth just blubbering over his words here. Wait a second. What can I do? How can I help out? What can I do to maybe help out with things around here so I can... I mean, this is the pretty gracious. Wait a second. Picture again your father, your boss, your spouse. The walk, dad picks up little Johnny. "Johnny, don't be scared. Come here." All right? Puts his arm around little Johnny and says, "This time I'm going to show you mercy. Let's go get ice cream. I won't forget. And by the way, I'll buy you that bike that you always wanted. Oh, by the way, also, we're going to get your favorite meal tonight." For my kids, it would be chicken nuggets. Shocking. Right? Your boss sitting there and you go in. He just says to you, "I can tell you're nervous. I can tell you're anxious. Don't be scared." Sometimes I think bosses like that, right? They like to see you. "Don't be scared. I'm actually going to promote you to vice president. Oh, by the way, that house payment that you told me you've been struggling with, we'll take care of it. Oh, the food that you need to put on the table for the next years, since you have four boys, and don't worry about it." Your spouse, right, sitting next to you, grabs your hand and simply says, I love you. Wait a second. Well, what can I do, Dad? I mean, I really messed up. How can I make it up to you? How can I... Look at verses 9 to 13. Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson." 9b, all that belonged to Saul and to his house, all that... What I just said, Mephibosheth, I'm going to kind of remind you now. I'm going to explain it even more. All that belonged to Saul, your grandpa, and all his house I've given to your master's. It's all yours. Verse 10. And all, and you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. Wait a second. I know I'm lame, but I can do something. I can go out and help out in some way. I can earn being a part of the family now. I can take up on some of this, verse 11, end of verse 11, if you look at it. Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Verse 13, Mephibosheth ends up living in Jerusalem, always eating at the king's table. What's he saying here? Welcome to the kingdom, Mephibosheth. Welcome home. Enjoy the blessings now. Enjoy them every day. Enjoy them forever. Wait a second. This doesn't make sense. This isn't pull up our bootstraps, work for our blessings. This isn't American culture. We got to do this. I got to do something. No, you can picture again Mephibosheth. I don't understand. It doesn't make sense. That's right. Neither does the gospel. The covenant was made with Mephibosheth's father, Jonathan. But the greater purpose was in verse 3. Look at verse 3 again. That I may show kindness of God to him. The gospel doesn't make sense. God's kindness to David pressed him on to show kindness to Mephibosheth. All of us in here are shameful. We are Mephibosheth. We're crippled. We're lame. We're helpless. We're fugitives on the run from the king. We're dead dogs, as he says in verse 8. We're sinners. On the run. Isaiah 64:6 says, "We have all become like one who is unclean, and all our righteous deeds are like a polluted garment. We all fade like a leaf, and our iniquities, our sins, like the wind, take us away." All of us unclean, all of us polluted, all of us crippled, all living in Lodabar. All of us distanced from the king. Separated, running from God. We're the prodigal son running from the father, distant, oceans apart from the king. Through his father, Saul, Mephibosheth, through his grandfather, Saul, an enemy of David. Through our father, Adam, an enemy of God. Romans 5:10a, "For if while we were enemies," Romans 5:12, "therefore, just as sin came into the world through one man, and death through sin, and death so spread to all men, because all sinned." Through Saul, Mephibosheth, grandson, enemy to the king. Through Adam, we are enemies to God. Mephibosheth, powerless and hopeless, separated. You and I, powerless and hopeless, separated. Colossians 1, "And you who once were alienated, separated, and hostile mind, doing evil deeds." David took initiative and goes after. Mephibosheth doesn't know he's coming. He's needy. He's crippled. He's at the house of Maker. He's not expecting unmerited kindness to just show up at the door. And he brings him home. Picture Luke 15 of the Good Samaritan. You don't need to turn there, but laying there on the side of the road, helpless, hopeless, right? He's beaten. He's crippled. He's needy. He can't turn anywhere. And then all of a sudden someone shows up. The most unexpected person shows up. And he takes initiative and goes and helps him. We're not the Good Samaritan. We're not the picture of David in this scene. We're Mephibosheth. God took initiative and went after hopeless, needy, down and outers by sending his son Jesus. David saw Mephibosheth through his son Jonathan. God sees us through his son Jesus. Romans 5:6, for while we were still weak and far off from God, separated, at the time, the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows his love for us, coming after us when we're far off. And that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Since therefore we have now been justified by his blood, much more shall we be saved by him from the wrath of God. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his son, much more, now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by his life. More than that, grace upon grace, grace upon grace. More than that, we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received reconciliation. All of this from God, through Christ, reconciled to himself. Enemies of God, not through the blood of Christ, made right with God. Us being seen through the Son Christ. Mephibosheth being seen through Jonathan. God's unmerited graces to his children through King Jesus. Follow along with me on the screen. The generosity and magnanimity of God are so great that he accepts nothing from us. David expected nothing from Mephibosheth. He couldn't offer him anything. What could he do for his land? What could he do for the kingdom? What could he do? He couldn't do anything. He accepts nothing from us without rewarding it beyond all computation. The vast disproportion existing between our work and God's reward of it displays his boundless grace, to say nothing of the gift of salvation, which is made before we have even begun to do any work. David went after Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth had no clue. Before he did any work, David was showing kindness to Mephibosheth through the promise he made. Mephibosheth, made a prince, adopted into the kingdom, exalted when he should have been slain, now lives in the king's courts of David, forever supplied, and sits at his table forever as Prince Mephibosheth. We, now joint heirs, fellow heirs with God, fellow heirs with Christ. One day, we have eternal, never-ending, a banquet feast, just like Mephibosheth, but that much greater. Picture of grace. May we, who God came after and brought us home to the kingdom, be able to say, like he did in verse 3, that we, us, in this room that know Christ, that have been brought into the kingdom, may show the kindness of God to the world of Mephibosheth. We all have Mephibosheth in our life. We were Mephibosheth. May we show the kindness of God to a world full of Mephibosheth. David sought out kindness because of God. We were sought after and showed eternal grace because of Christ. Beauty, right? A banquet feast. Lame and crippled, brought into the kingdom. If you can think even this week, because of the kindness of God to you through Christ, I want us all to really think about this week. Like, take initiative. Pray about someone. Pray about a situation that because of the kindness of God through Christ to you, because you were Mephibosheth and you got brought into the kingdom, take initiative and show unmerited, unexpected, not knowing it was going to come, kindness and grace to someone. Little homework assignment. But don't do it out of duty. Do it out of delight. As you think about God's kindness to you, to us, may we think about showing kindness and grace to someone that comes in our footsteps this week. Pray that you would initiate and show kindness, whatever means that may be, to someone who doesn't expect it from you. I mean, may we definitely, we need to respond to needs as they arise and they come about, but we need to initiate kindness. Be thinking about the King that we serve, and then how can I serve other people and show kindness? Ephesians 4:32 says, be kind and compassionate to one another. Why? Forgiving each other. Why? Just as Christ God forgave you. Show kindness and be compassionate. Forgive one another. Why? Just because we want to be good people? No. Because Christ forgave us. Those of us who have repented and turned to the King, we were enemies of God on the run. As we come to the throne, as we come and approach God through His Son, Jesus, do not fear. Do not fear. We're adopted. All the land is ours. The blessings of being in the kingdom is now and forever. Don't fear. May our hope in the midst of our failures, in the midst of our shortcoming, in the midst of our sin, turn us to the only one who can save us. Because remember that King David who showed all this kindness? It wasn't but two chapters later he fell with Bathsheba. He's not the king. He can't save us. David was a sinner just like the rest of us. He was the most Jesus-like character, we would argue, maybe of the Old Testament, but he wasn't Jesus. He can't save us. May our hope in the midst of those failures and shortcomings turn to the only one who can save us. And so as we partake of the table this morning, may we celebrate the grace and kindness of the King. So if the ushers could go ahead and get ready, we're going to, let's celebrate together in fellowship. We are a body of believers that the King ran after us. We were in Lodabar, far off. And He came and initiated kindness, and He came and got us. And we get to eat at the table now and forever.